Merkel Media.
Lashback Fridays on Macroaggressions. We're going back to May 13th, 2020, episode number 21, The Smoking Gun, Building 7. If you're thinking about converting some of your soon-to-be worthless fiat currency, or maybe even your retirement accounts, into tangible assets like gold and silver, go to our website, www.macroaggressions.gold. Talk to Tony Arterburn over there, and he'll hook you up. Now, enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, Macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Charlie Robinson. I am the host of Macroaggressions. Thanks for checking us out. I know you have a lot of options out there. I appreciate you investing your time and energy into this little show. Well, it finally happened. I was kicked off Twitter. So if you were going by my previous episodes where I asked you to follow me at Moefus, you can go ahead and forget about that. You might have already run up against that wall. I was kicked off for asking a question in the comment section about when are we going to take Bill Gates and throw him into a volcano? Clearly a joke. Obviously, Twitter does not have a sense of humor about that sort of stuff. Now, if I had been doing this while dressed in drag, talking about transgender rights and reading stories to five-year-olds in a skirt with no underwear on, that would have been totally fine. But God forbid I bring up Bill fucking Gates and joke about how the world would be a better place if we lived back in the olden days when they sacrificed people to volcanoes. So, never mind. I'm back. Don't tell Twitter. You can find me at macroaggression, but that last letter N, they switched it to the number 3. So it looks like at macroaggression, but just replace the N with a 3. I'm going to put the link to it all in the description so you can just link to it. But in case you're wondering, I'm going to try and get around those bastards at Twitter. and I'm sure it'll, you know, I'll get thrown off again, you know, for pointing out some inconsistencies with our society, but that just kind of goes with the territory. You can still find me currently, we'll see how long this lasts, on Facebook / The Octopus of Global Control. And you can also check out my website, the same name, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. If you like this show, you can share it. Nobody's telling you you can't. Please do. The algorithms will clearly not, you know, pick this up as a favorite. I'm not, you know, not doing cat videos or talking about how to crochet a sweater for your uncle or something, you know. So it's up to you guys. If you enjoy the show and you like it, put it on social media and share it with all your friends and family or you know, anybody that you think might be interested. But this particular episode is going to be hardcore because we're talking about 9/11. Now, we just did an episode on Project for a New American Century, and these were the masterminds of 9/11. It's not to say that they were the only people involved in it, of course, but if you want to start and start to dig in, and you've come to the pretty obvious realization that it was not 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters, the next logical step is, if it's not those guys, then who was it? And when you have a lot of advanced foreknowledge, you have people that are writing papers a year in advance talking about how they need a catalyzing catastrophic event like a new Pearl Harbor. Well, you know what? Those guys have to be considered as potential suspects, I would think. But to, of course, as most of us have found out, to do so, to bring that up, is to be somehow disrespectful to the victims. I've never really been able to figure that line of logic out, because, you know, if somebody murdered me, and the official story was, let's say it was the Gary Webb situation. Let's just go with Gary Webb. Take me out of it. Gary Webb commits suicide by shooting himself in the head twice. Is it disrespectful to Gary Webb to say that story sounds fishy, I want to know who really did it? I would say absolutely not. It's the most respectful thing you can do. Try and figure out who actually killed the guy. So with 9/11, there's an interesting psychological effect that happens with a lot of people that are not awake to the reality of what happened on that day, is that, you know, if you bring up the topic and say it's not Arabs, you know, let's look at some of these other guys, that in some people's minds can be perceived as disrespectful to the victims, which is insanity to me. It's the exact opposite. It, not only is it not disrespectful, it is respectful. You got to find out who did it. Obvious reasons, so they don't do it again, right? If you can't change what happened on that day, cannot go back and you know, unfuck that situation. What you can do is make sure that the people that were involved in it are put away forever or hung or whatever happens. You can make sure that the public knows that sometimes what the media reports as being the facts are not actually the facts. And sometimes that's because the media is lazy, and sometimes that's because the media is in on it. And I would say that in the case of 9/11, probably both were in play as far as the media is concerned. They had advanced foreknowledge of the event. That is undeniable. You can just watch the videos and hear them talking about things that haven't yet happened. But also, the media is very lazy when it comes to actually digging into sources. You know, either they're given instructions by their publishers as to how they want a story to kind of look, or they just kind of follow the status quo. You also have to remember that you're not getting hired to go work at the Washington Post unless you're the type of person that writes the stories that the Washington Post likes. So it's not like they're ever going to hire me, because I'd just be butting heads with the editor on every single story. Be like, why are you writing about vaccines again? Why are you writing about 9/11? Stop with all this stuff. Write about how we're spreading freedom and democracy in Afghanistan, in Iraq. And my response would be, I'm not writing that, because that's not what's happening. So you find that these media outlets are compromised they're compromised, period. But then within that, they will only bring in writers that are the types of writers that would last there. And if you want to last at a outfit like the Washington Post, you need to write stories about how empire is a good thing, about how the United States is the good guy, about how military interventionism is necessary, about how we're spreading democracy and we're putting sanctions on countries because this is part of the humanitarian aid. I mean, you have to basically not know anything about what's really going on, or you have to be paid to not understand what's actually going on. And there's a lot of that. There's a lot of that happening in the corporate media. Just look at a guy like Max Boot, who is a fucking jackass. I mean, I there's no other way to describe this guy. You read his articles, it is just garbage. And of course, when I made the list of people that were involved in the writing of the Project for a New American Century, involved in the writing of that document, who was one of them? Max Boot, of course. He's a hack. And his articles always contradict themselves. But one thing is for certain in that he is pro-Israel to his core. Israel can do nothing wrong. And that's just the type of guy that they like there. So you've got systemic problems with the media as in general. And then you've got particular writers that are sort of looked at as being establishment, good guys. The good guys meaning that the establishment likes them. People like Barry Weiss and Maggie Haberman and Max Boot and all these guys, Ezra Klein, all these guys that they'll write whatever they're told to write. They have no soul. They have no interest. They're just cheerleaders for the establishment. And the establishment rewards them, gives them cushy jobs with these big companies and all that good stuff. So how does this – where am I going with this in regards to 9/11? Well, one of the things that you realize when you look back on 9/11, it was chaotic at the time, obviously. But everybody's tuning in their TV. They're trying to get information. They're trying to figure out what exactly happened. The problem is if you have a burglary in your house, you come home, doors kicked in. The place is a mess. Hard to tell what's missing, what's involved. You call the police. Police come over to your house to take a report. Depending on their level of interest, maybe they dust for fingerprints. Maybe they look at surveillance video. Maybe they, check into some of the people that you have relationships with. Do you owe money to people? Are you a drug dealer? Is there anybody that might have a problem with it? They do an investigation, maybe even hand it off to an actual investigator who then takes that case, digs into it, looks into, your call records to see who you are and see if you're telling the truth, looks into the, if anything was missing and whatever. They do their investigation. And then at some point, they tell you, this is what happened on, for your burglary. It was this guy kicked in your door. We pulled the security footage from a neighboring building. We could see that the guy drove by. We matched his license plate. We know who it was and we caught him. And this is, 2 weeks, 3 weeks from now. And that's a reasonable series of events for solving some sort of crime. The problem on 9/11 was that the media had it all figured out within an hour. The most complex and complicated terrorist event in definitely American history, maybe world history, who knows, who cares? They had 9/11 figured out in an hour. The buildings were just, hadn't even fallen down yet. And they're talking about Osama bin Laden and who would want to do this and why was he able to do this? And let's dig into his background. And they had it all figured out, which shows that they were complicit in this or incompetent or more than likely both. This is an investigation that is still going on in people's minds. We're almost two decades later, and people are still asking the question, what happened on 9/11? You've got two planes flying into the Twin Towers. You've got one plane that goes down in Shanksville. You've got another plane that hits the Pentagon. We've got 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters. We're still trying to figure out if this was true or not. But the media had it figured out in an hour. And that's how you know they're lying. Because this is a situation that you cannot have sorted out in an hour or a day or a week or a month or maybe even a year. This is a very complicated crime. A massive crime scene that span multiple states, cities, counties, federal, state, local. I mean, every jurisdiction it was involved in this, led by the FBI, which if you're hearing this for the first time, the FBI is – I'm sure there's some good people in there. But the FBI is a criminal organization. They have been involved in – almost every terrorist attack that's happened in the United States has the FBI's fingerprints all over it. They set up people all the time. They take low IQ people and tell them, we're going to help you manufacture a bomb. We're going to give you a fake bomb and you plant this. And blah. I mean, this is not my opinion. They've been busted doing this all the time. So you've got the FBI investigating this crime. All right, so you're automatically at a disadvantage. But back to the media. The media was talking about this like they had it all figured out. And they brought in L. Paul Bremer, straight out of Marshall McLennan, to come in. And within an hour, he starts giving forming the narrative, which is, well, you know, there's a couple guys we could look at, but Osama bin Laden is definitely high on the list. He certainly has the financial capacity to do this. He has the organizational skills. He's blah, blah, blah. You know, of course, he never mentions that Osama bin Laden, CIA name Tim Osman, was an asset that had been working for the U.S. government for years and years. I mean, it actually wasn't even that much of a secret. Back in the 80s, he was helping the Mujahideen fight the Soviets in Afghanistan. And so he was one of our guys, right? So very dirty set of circumstances. But Paul Bremer's out there setting the narrative. And me, like everybody else, just goes, okay, all right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know who did this. He sounds like he knows, or NBC News sounds like they know. I mean, they're saying it with authority. And a lot can be done if you say something with just absolute conviction and authority, like this is the way it is. And, you know, people that are hearing you might go, well, okay, if you say so, you seem like you know what you're talking about. And that's how it was on 9/11. We got a lot of that from people that were, that were supposed to be experts. We heard from them because we weren't experts. We didn't know any better. But almost immediately, you start to run up against some really questionable comments, and the official story kind of seems a little disjointed, but it's understandable because it's chaos, you know. It's trying to figure out what had really happened. You know, in fact, the media would have been much better served if they had come out for the first day or so and just said, this is what we know, is that two airplanes flew into those buildings and an airplane crashed in Pennsylvania and an airplane hit the Pentagon, and that's all we know. And we don't really know who's behind it. There's a lot to sort out, you know. Forgive us for not having it all figured out, but there's a lot to unpack here, and we're working on it, but we just don't know right now. That actually would have been a great strategy if they had done that, because nobody can expect them to know the answer. The fact that they had it figured out within an hour is actually the most alarming part of it, because you can't know that. That's almost, how do you know they're lying? Well, you know they're lying because they had the story all put together like immediately. And an hour after the first planes hit, to have that sorted out, to know who's behind it and everything like that, that's unrealistic. And it's an unnatural way to respond to that. I mean, everybody wanted to know what really happened, but nobody actually thought that we would have it all figured out. You know, it would take some time. And so anyway, the official lie. Yeah, I got to quote George W. Bush talking about this. And this is something he said that made me, at the time, I don't think I even really heard this, but looking back on it, this comment is very suspicious. He said, "Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September 11th, malicious lies that attempt to shift the blame away from the terrorists themselves, away from the guilty." Well, look, let's be very clear about something here. The outrageous conspiracy theory is the official story of 9/11. It is a collection of several really bad lies, easily disproven by just about anyone with a little bit of common sense and half a brain, a limited knowledge of science, and, you know, it's a disjointed story, like I said. But, you know, after all, if these conspiracy theories that George W. Bush is talking about are so outrageous, then why do you have to instruct the general public not to believe them? Like, they should just be outrageous enough that no one would ever dream of believing them. Therefore, it would be unnecessary to tell the people not to believe what's being proposed. But the fact that he came out and said specifically, don't listen to these conspiracy theories, of course, makes someone like me want to listen to those conspiracy theories. And we've talked about that term before. It was invented by the CIA. It's just a term used to discredit people that are looking into the truth of a situation. So you've got the president of the United States coming out and telling everybody, let's not tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories, while he's trying to sell a story of 19 Arab hijackers who couldn't fly planes, taking down four planes, knocking down three buildings with two planes, putting a hole in the Pentagon that isn't the size of an airplane, and crashing a plane in Shanksville without leaving any traces of an actual plane in Shanksville. And he's asking us to not believe outrageous conspiracy theories? Go fuck yourself. The official story is preposterous. Anyone that believes that has rocks in their head. I mean, it is... We've had 2 decades to figure this stuff out. What is your excuse for not knowing that the official story of 9/11 is a gigantic lie? I mean, grow up. You know, I understand that this doesn't, you know, that you got other things to do and other things to think about, and maybe you're not, you know, in this world. But good Lord, man, you got to wake up if you still think that the official story of 9/11 is true, because that story launched 2 major wars and a multiple, multitude of several smaller wars because of this. It started the war on terror, which is a bullshit Orwellian term just to begin with, but it started the war on terror, which has sucked out $6.5 trillion worth of money, either net present value or, you know, taking into account future liabilities and things like that. This is not to say nothing of the million plus people that have died from this, been displaced, trillions of dollars in damages. And for what? Now, if the official story of 9/11 was true, and there were Arabs that were trying to get us here, so, you know, by taking down these buildings, well, then, you know, we could have this conversation. But it all boils down to the actual story, to what really happened. And, you know, there was a lot of cheerleading going on in 2001, late September, when W got up on that pile of rubble with that bullhorn and said that the people that knocked down those towers were going to hear from us soon. But the people that knocked down those towers are his buddies. They haven't heard from us, have they? I haven't heard, you know, I haven't heard anybody, confronting Dick Cheney about this. At least not enough people. George started the lie early on in that day. Remember, he said, well, first of all, when we walked into the classroom, I had seen this plane fly into the first building. There was a TV set on. I thought it was pilot error. Okay. There's a couple things wrong with this statement right off the bat. First of all, the statement's a lie. There was no footage of the first plane flying into the World Trade Center until several hours later. And there was no TV in that classroom. So he's lying about that, which is, you know, not all that hard to understand. The second lie in that statement is that him saying that he thought it was pilot error. Now, George Bush had been given several documents many days in advance regarding the World Trade Center towers possibly being hit by airplanes in a terrorist attack. So for him to, you know, assume that it was pilot error is laughable. I mean, even somebody as stupid as George W. Bush would not make the assumption that it was anything other than terrorism, especially after he read the document entitled Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside the United States. So why would you assume it was pilot error? You should assume, oh, this is probably, remember that Bin Laden document that they dropped on my desk saying that he might be thinking about it attacking the United States? Maybe this is what it was about. So his whole statement is a lie. But Webster Tarpley, who's an author, has a really great quote about that morning. And I'm going to read it to you right now. It says, the second attack is the one that is captured on news film because he, meaning Bush, is in the middle of a photo opportunity listening to these children read My Pet Goat at the elementary school in Sarasota, Florida. My personal analysis of this is that he is frozen in fear, terror, and panic. He does not know what to do. And he sits there waiting for someone to tell him what it is he must do. He's not an active president. He does not call for telephones. He doesn't issue a parade of crisp orders. He doesn't say, scramble every fighter, bring down all planes, close the borders, go to red alert. Nothing of the kind. He sits there. And we know his press secretary, Ari Fleischer, is in the back of the room holding up a big placard saying, don't say anything. Don't comment. This is obviously not a president. This is a puppet. This is a figurehead. This is a ceremonial figure, if you'd like. This is how Bush tried to explain his behavior to the 9/11 Commission when he was interviewed. Of course, he had to be interviewed together with Cheney. The reports are that he was sitting on Cheney's lap while he gave his interview. There were other reports that Cheney was sitting on his wife's lap because that is how he has to appear. Cheney can't appear without his wife, and Bush can't appear without Cheney. So Bush said that, I sat there and tried to project calm and strength. Now, this is an absurdity that is verging on pandemonium of insanity. He simply doesn't know what to do. He has to be told what to do. Yeah. That was a weird one. If you remember him just sitting there looking like a big dummy, just staring into space and not getting, I mean, and then he said later, well, I didn't want to offend the kids. I mean, I think the kids would understand. This is the biggest terrorist attack in American history, right? I got to go. I got other stuff to do. It's nice to read books to you. That's fun. But I think everybody would give him a free pass if he just stood up and said, I got to go, which of course he didn't, because George W. Bush is a puppet. Now, I know everybody directed a lot of anger at him after his 8 years in as president, and I did too, and I'm not trying to absolve him of any sort of guilt for this stuff, but you have to understand that if you did a hierarchical chart of where the power was inside the Bush administration, he would not be at the top of that chart. Dick Cheney would be. Dick Cheney was running that show. George Bush would have been several steps down, and that is, and Webster Tarpley described him perfectly. He was a puppet. You know, he was a figurehead. That's what he's doing. And, you know, and he also mentioned something that's interesting in that quote about when Bush and Cheney testified for the 9/11 Commission hearings, that they did it in private. They did it off the record with no reporters, nobody taking notes or anything like that. It was a condition. It was very weird. You know, that's not how you conduct an interview. If you actually had nothing to hide and you actually wanted the 9/11 Commission to get to the truth. But the 9/11 Commission, or more accurately described, the 9/11 omission, was a joke from the start. They first put Henry Kissinger in as the head of the chairman of that until people flipped out. Rightfully so. They said, you got to get this guy out of here. So they got rid of him, and then they replaced him. And if you don't know much about the 9/11 Commission report or the people that wrote it, just understand, here's a quote from the 9/11 Commission report on page 172. And this will tell you just about everything you need to know about this pile of shit. The question of who bankrolled the September 11th attacks was of little practical significance. Okay, so there you go. You can take the 9/11 Commission report and you can throw that in the garbage, because it was a whitewashing of this event. If they think that who financed the attacks is of little practical significance, then I think we know everything we need to know about them. You know, they can't be trusted, because what they're talking about is nonsense there. Because of course it matters who financed this. It would be, you know, one of the things you would look at, motive, opportunity, who had access to the buildings and the planes and who had the, you know, where did the financing come from? It would be one of the top four or five things that you would look for. But to say it had no, you know, that it was of little practical significance is an indication that that the people running that commission were in no way actively trying to get to the bottom of what happened on 9/11. But let's get back to the official story of 9/11. So the way the story goes is that there were 19 Arab hijackers that were members of Al-Qaeda, and they overpowered the flight crew, took control of the planes, flew them into buildings, the Pentagon, and into a small hole in a field in Pennsylvania. Now, there are a few problems with this story that created some understandable confusion. The first problem with the passenger list that have been released is that the identities of several of the alleged hijackers have changed with no explanation. That shouldn't happen, like, ever. And it did. So, who made those changes and why? Another problem with the story is, and it's kind of a big one, is that at least 10 of the hijackers turned up alive. And if these guys were able to take control of an airplane, fly it around for an hour without being shot down, fly it into the World Trade Center, blow up the plane, knock down three buildings with two planes, and then come back to life in Saudi Arabia, I think it's time to throw David Copperfield's ass out and get these boys a show in Las Vegas, because that is really impressive. And so we've got Kevin Barrett, who is an author, and he had this to say about the Arab, the 19 Arab hijackers. He said, "We know that the 15 hijackers who were Saudis, the alleged hijackers, because they were not on those planes, not one of the 19 hijackers or any Arabs were on any of the four planes, according to the passenger list and according to all the evidence that would be there if they were on the plane, but has not been produced. So these 15 Saudi patsies who were set up to take the blame for 9/11 were, in fact, CIA agents. We know this. I had this confirmed directly by a CIA source that these 15 Saudis entered and repeatedly re-entered on these supposedly, they call them employment visas. But there's a special number for employment visas that are only given to CIA assets as a reward for their service to the Central Intelligence Agency, and this visa allows them to come to the U.S. Typically, they're paid for their work for the CIA in Saudi Arabia, and then they are given this special kind of visa, which is disguised as an employment visa, but it's of a particular type. And all 15 of these guys had that visa. That shows that they were, in fact, Central Intelligence Agency agents. Some of them were living with FBI people in California. So these 15 Saudis were not working against the United States government. They were working for the United States government, and they were set up so that Saudi Arabia could be potentially blamed for the September 11th attacks, which were actually perpetrated by Israel and its American assets." That's Dr. Kevin Barrett, who's a journalist. Let's take a quick break so that we can hear from the sponsors that make this show possible, like Delete Me. The tech giants make a fortune selling your personal information to all kinds of outlets for them to use as they please. Delete Me removes your personal information like name, address, age, phone number, email address, and photos of your home from leading data broker sites. Removing personal information from data broker websites reduces your online footprint and removes Google search results. These guys really understand opt-out and privacy policies, so you don't have to spend your time focusing on things like legal jargon. Delete Me has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, NPR, and CNET. And with over 20 million personal listings removed, Delete Me is the most trusted and proven privacy solution available, so check them out by using the link in the description to see just how they can take back your personal information. And Fiverr is an outstanding resource. If you need somebody to outsource some of your work to, or you just need specialized help with a project that you're working on, you need to check out Fiverr. They have a network of thousands of freelance experts in business, design, programming and tech, digital marketing, music and audio, video and animation, writing and translation, and so much more. Need someone to build out a website or help you grow your current business with a digital marketing campaign? You can find thousands of people ready to get to work on your project at a fixed price that you set at Fiverr. Your payment's only released to the freelancer once you're pleased and approve the work you've received. If you have questions, you can call Fiverr 24/7. Just click the link in the box in the description. Start putting this army of freelancers to work for you. And cash advance. We are living through a very strange time filled with an unbelievable amount of uncertainty. We don't know what the world's going to look like weeks from now, let alone months from now. If you find yourself in a financial emergency and in need of money right away, you at least have an option with cash advance. You can submit your request online and receive an answer in minutes so that you will know where you stand and what programs they have available for you. Their online service is entirely free and works to find potential lenders in their network. So just fill out the secure online form and see which option works best for you. Look, I hope you don't need this service, but if you do during this crazy time in our lives, at least you know that you have another option with cash advance. Click the link in the description box to see what they have to offer. And with all of these sponsors, your support for them directly impacts and supports the show. We certainly do appreciate that. Now let's get back to the show. So let's talk about the real smoking gun of 9/11. Now, I've been pretty open about 9/11 being the event that woke me up. Not on that day in 2001. It took years for me. But in specifically, the component of 9/11 that woke me up was Building 7 coming down. And it's an interesting topic because a lot of people don't know about Building 7. Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth did a big ad campaign, not just in New York City, but in major cities around the world on, I think, the 15-year anniversary of it, that said very, very, very simple advertising message. Did you know that a third building fell on 9/11? I love it. I've told Richard Gage multiple times how much I, as somebody with an advertising background like I have, I just love the simplicity of it. It's a question. It's not, you know, it's not an attacking sort of statement. It's just a question. And if you didn't know that a third building fell, you might say, what are they talking about? Well, what they're talking about is the 47-story Solomon Brothers building, otherwise known as World Trade Center Building Number 7. Let me read you something from Craig Bartmer. He was a New York police officer. He said, I was real close to Building 7 when it fell down. That didn't sound like just a building falling down to me while I was running away from it. There's a lot of eyewitness testimony down there of hearing explosions. I didn't see any reason for that building to fall down the way it did. And a lot of guys should be saying the same thing. I don't know what the fear is coming out and talking about it. I don't know, but it's the truth. And then Ed Caccia, who's a New York City firefighter, said, we originally had thought there was like an internal detonation explosives because it went in succession. Boom, 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 boom. And then the tower came down. So World Trade Center 7 is the only steel frame building in history to collapse due to fire. If we are to believe that Trade Center 7 actually did collapse due to fire, then it stands to reason that the procedures for firefighters working on high-rise buildings would need to be changed. And also, the engineering standards regarding fire would need to be revamped, and alternative material would need to be used instead of, you know, what has currently exists. But none of that has happened. You know, I think it's important to to know that the 9/11 commission, that's whole job, the whole purpose of them was to figure out what happened on 9/11. In their big, thick report that looks like a phone book that came out, they don't mention Building 7 once. Think about that for a second. You have a 47-story high office building, third largest building in history to come down besides World Trade Center 1 and 2. This building is massive. It would be the biggest building in many cities, you know, most cities. It came down that day on 9/11, and the 9/11 Commission report doesn't mention it. They just fucking ignored it. What does that tell you? I mean, you don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to ask that question. Why didn't you guys look at that third building that came down? Reasonable question, right? Let's do this in a silly kind of way. Let's talk about 9/11 like this. Let's say that your wife has been out of town for the last couple of days, right? And she calls you and asks how everything is going while she's been out of town. And what'd you do last night? And you tell her you went out with your friend Max, you went to the movies, and you saw, I don't know, Mission Impossible 22 or something. Then you went to Bob's Pizza on Main Street, had a great dinner. After that, you made a quick stop at Moe's Tavern, and you had a drink or two, and then you went home. This is your version of events. It's logical, it's fairly detailed, and you told your wife this. This is what you did last night. So you're now committed to this story from this moment on because that's what you said happened. Now, if your wife knows for a fact that Bob's Pizza on Main Street went out of business 2 weeks ago and that the restaurant is not there, is it fair for her to question whether or not you went to the movies and had drinks with Max? I mean, she knows for sure that one part of your story is a lie. So how could she believe the other parts? The Bob's Pizza part of this analogy is that on September 11th at 5:21, World Trade Center Building 7, also known as the Solomon Brothers Building, a 47-story steel and concrete building collapsed into its own footprint at free fall speed. It was not hit by an airplane. It had no structural damage prior to the collapse, though it did have fire damage that was cited as being from furniture that had caught fire earlier in the day. And that building just up and disappeared for no good reason. So everyone in the world has seen the footage of Building 1 and 2 coming down. That third building came down the same day, just 8 hours later, and nobody talks about it. Why is that? What are they hiding with Building 7? It makes you ask. If you haven't seen the footage, God, if you're listening to this, Jesus, you've got to have seen the footage of it coming down. Just go watch it. It's a symmetrical. It's a textbook controlled demolition of a building. That's what it is. That's what the video shows. You don't need to be structural engineer, you don't need to be somebody that's an expert in demolition to understand that building was brought down into its own footprint the same way a hotel in Las Vegas would be brought down. It was done deliberately. And so if that building was wired for demolition, Building 7, which it was, then all the buildings were wired for demolition. And if you watch Towers 1 and 2 come down, they were blown up as well. They didn't fall over, they didn't tip over, they didn't fall into each other, they didn't lean, they blew up. They didn't fall down, they blew up. You look at the lateral ejection of materials and you watch towers 1 and 2 go down, it is ejecting material blocks away laterally, not vertically, not downwards, but out to the sides. You can watch those videos of buildings 1, 2, and 7, and you can watch as it's coming down a couple of floors, 10 floors below, as it's coming down, 10 floors below, you'll see squibs going off. You'll see explosions, small explosions kicking out laterally. That's the support columns being blown out, you know, fractions of a second apart from one another. That's how you rig it. That's how you rig a building to be brought down. You can do the split screen. You can watch, you know, building 1 or building 2 or building 7 on one side, and you can watch a Vegas hotel room being brought down on the other side, and you'll notice the same pattern. It's not debatable. just watch it. So that's obviously a huge problem. Just the eyeball test, that's a problem. But there's another problem, and this one is very difficult to explain, and so far nobody in the media has ever really been able to give you a good example for it. And that is that on the evening of 9/11 in London, a reporter at the BBC announced the collapse of Building 7 25 minutes before it actually happened. Now, that's a hell of a trick. I understand that it's chaos and all kinds of things going on. I understand that there could be reports that are erroneous, and, you know, it was a difficult day. I understand if they got it wrong or whatever. But that's not what happened. It's not that they got it wrong. It's that they got it right. And they got it right before it happened, which is damn near impossible to explain. So let me read you this. This is from 4:57 p.m. Eastern Time, United States. BBC studio reporter states, "We'll leave it there for a moment. We've got some news just coming in, actually, that the Solomon Brothers building in New York, right in the heart of Manhattan, has also collapsed. This does fit in with a warning from the British Foreign Office a couple of hours ago to British citizens that there is a real risk." Let me get the exact words. The British Foreign Office, the foreign part of the British government, said it was a strong risk of further atrocities in the United States, and it does seem as if there now is another one with the Solomon Brothers building collapsing. We've got no word yet on casualties. One assumes that the building would have been virtually deserted. Whether this latest collapse is going to influence the president, who we heard about a few moments ago, who was expected to be heading from Nebraska back to Washington, we don't know. That was 4:57 p.m. There we go, 5 o'clock, 3 minutes later. The 47-story Solomon Brothers, situated very close to World Trade Centers, has also collapsed. It's the same report, same BBC report, same reporter. 5:07, 7 minutes later. Now more on the latest building collapse in New York. You may have heard a few moments ago that we were talking about the Solomon Brothers building collapsing, and indeed it has. And apparently, it's only a few hundred yards away from where the World Trade Centers were. And it seems that this was not the result of a new attack. It was because the building had been weakened during this morning's attacks. We'll probably find out more about that from our correspondent, Jane Stanley. Jane, what more can you tell us about the Solomon Brothers building and its collapse? And then they go to this footage of Jane Stanley in New York City, working for the BBC on an elevated platform, probably on the roof of a building somewhere. Over her shoulders is the backdrop of New York City. Jane Stanley is reporting about the collapse of the building. She says, you know, in fact, it has collapsed. And she goes on to talk about how the building was weakened earlier in the day from the attacks, and that the building has collapsed. Now, on the bottom of the screen, the text scroll going across says the 47-story Solomon Brothers building close to the World Trade Center has also collapsed. So that's running across the bottom. She's talking about this at 5:00, a little after 5:07. But the problem with this video, the problem for them is that over her left shoulder, you can still see the Solomon Brothers building standing there. It's not in the process of collapsing. It hasn't already collapsed. It's still there. She is reporting about the collapse of a building 15 minutes before it actually happened. In fact, the first report of it was 23 minutes before it actually happened. But by the time Jane's reporting on it, it's about 15 minutes before it's gone down. I'm still waiting for somebody to explain this. And of course, I'm being facetious because it's not, nobody's going to explain it. There is no explanation for this other than, you know, and to be clear, I don't think Jane Stanley was in on it, right? She's reading a script. She's being told what to say. They got their times screwed up, okay? They read the script before the actual event happened. They fucked up. And it's understandable. There was a whole lot going on. But you can't report on buildings falling down before they fall down and not have people question you. I guess in the United States you can, right? Because a lot of people just sort of blindly look the other way. But she wasn't the only person that had foreknowledge of this building coming down. It was known to people in the area. In fact, Lion Brian Williams from NBC News he's having this conversation. He's talking to Ashley Banfield, who's down there on the scene. He says, "Ashley, get out of there. Leave the camera unmanned if you need to, and get out of there. What we've been fearing all day has apparently happened. We've been watching No. 7 World Trade, which was part of the ancillary damage of the explosion and collapse of the other two. We've been talking all day about how fast these plumes of smoke move. You're watching one now. Look at the building dust in the wider shot on the left from across the river in New York. This was a 40-story building. They've been watching all day. It's like watching the collapse of an active volcano, and the dust from it is not unlike that of a volcano. We are on the phone with New York Fire Lieutenant David Restuccio. David, where are you right now? I'm on the corner of North Moore Street and Greenwich Street." Brian Williams says, "Can you confirm that it was No. 7 that just went in?" "Yes, sir." Brian Williams says, "You guys knew this was coming all day." And Lieutenant Restuccio says, "We had heard reports that the building was unstable and that eventually it would need to come down on its own or it would be taken down. I would imagine it came down on its own." Really? You're hearing reports all day long that the building's going to come down. Why is the building going to come down? Wasn't hit by a plane. Had minor office fires. Why was that building going to come down? Who told this guy that they needed to get out of there? When you've got a building that comes down at free fall speed, you wind up having to get involved in the physics of it all. But what you understand is that in order for a building to come down at free fall speed, which Building 7 did, you have to have no support columns blocking it. If you have any support columns, it makes the speed slower. It crumbles. It slowly comes down. Because that building came down at free fall speed, you can extrapolate that there were no support columns holding it up in the moments when it started to fall. So what that means is they were blown out. That's how you get it to fall at free fall speed. There can't be anything blocking it. So the columns are being blown out one by one, floor by floor by floor, which is the reason why it comes down without any interruption, which is the reason why it comes down at free fall speed. The only way that happens is if you have a controlled demolition and every column is removed simultaneously at the same time. So Building 7 is a smoking gun. And for people that have researched 9/11, it's one of those things that you can't get around. There's no explanation. The reaction from the media and the government has been very suspicious, how they just pretend like it didn't actually happen. The media won't report on it. The government won't talk about it. The 9/11 Commission won't put it in their books. NIST pretends like there was no problem with it. They come up with these wacky simulations that don't take anything into account and don't actually show the entire building coming down. It's very weird. I mean, NIST is dirty to its core. But then a side topic from that, one that doesn't get any, you know, really any play, is Shanksville. That's the plane that went down in Pennsylvania. And so you don't need to be an expert in plane crashes to understand a couple things that have to do with plane crashes. One, there will be wreckage from a plane. Reasonable, right? If there are people on board, there will be bodies from people that were killed when the plane crashed into the ground. There will be debris from the plane. Seats, luggage, Coca-Cola cans, whatever. These are things that you will expect to find. Those things weren't found in Shanksville. I know that that might sound a bit unusual because you probably haven't heard that, but they didn't find those things. I'm going to read you what a series of quotes from people that were there on the scene, and I want you to listen to not just what they say, but who they are. So we'll start with this. I stopped being coroner after about 20 minutes because there were no bodies there. Wallace Miller, coroner of Somerset County, Pennsylvania. He was among the first people to arrive at the Flight 93 crash site on the morning of September 11th. Here he is again. He says, I got to the actual crash site and I could not believe what I saw. Usually you see much debris, wreckage, and much noise and commotion. This crash was different. There was no wreckage, no bodies, and no noise. It appeared as though there were no passengers or crew on this plane. Let's go on with him. It was really a very unusual sight. You almost would have thought the passengers had been dropped off somewhere, even by the standard model of an airplane crash. There was very little, even by those standards. He had one more thing to say. This is the most eerie thing. I have not, to this day, seen a single drop of blood. Not a drop. Okay, so we're talking about the coroner there. The coroner is talking about how he wasn't needed as a coroner because there were no bodies there. This is a problem. Remember the Flight 93 story? That's the Let's Roll story. You know, how the passengers rose up and they got together and they said, we're going to take these guys. Let's roll. Let's go get these. Let's just get these guys. And they wound up taking the plane down before it could crash. Very heroic. Very made for Hollywood story. It's all bullshit. None of it happened. Okay. Stop believing fairy tales. The Flight 93 story is a fairy tale. Not real. These guys had a hard time finding anything here. Let's find, this is Faye Hahn. An EMT responded to the first reports of the crash in Shanksville. Several trees were burned badly and there were paper everywhere. We searched. I was told that there were 224 passengers, but later found out that there were actually 40. I was stunned. There was nothing there. John Meyer, reporter, regarding the plane crash in Shanksville, he said, we were so early that they hadn't had a chance to set up a barrier for the press. I was able to get right up to the edge of the crater. All I saw was a crater filled with small, charred plane parts. There were no suitcases, no recognizable plane parts, no body parts. Here's this guy, Wells Morrison, FBI agent. Okay. We arrived in the immediate area and walked up to the crater and the burning woods. My first thought was, where is the plane? Because most of what I saw was this honeycomb-looking stuff, which I believe is insulation or something like that. I was not seeing anything that was distinguishable either as human remains or aircraft debris. Okay. Here's another guy. It didn't look like a plane crash because there was nothing that looked like a plane. I have never seen anything like it. Just like a big pile of charcoal. That's kind of a weird description, wouldn't you say? Photographer Scott Spangle. I was looking for anything that that said tail, wing, plane, metal. There was nothing. So, you know, how could a plane crash in a field with 40 people on board who had luggage and all the things that you find on an airplane, and yet none of that is found in the debris? Patrick Madigan, commander of the Somerset Barracks, Pennsylvania State Police. I was amazed because it did not in any way, shape, or form look like a plane crash. Here's Assistant Fire Chief Rick King, driver of the first fire truck to reach the site. He said, "Where is this plane? And where are the people? Thousands of tiny pieces scattered around, bits of metal, insulation, wiring, but no fuselage, no wings, only a smoking crater and charred earth." Frank Monaco, Pennsylvania State Police. "Like a trash heap, nothing but tiny pieces of debris. It's just littered with small pieces." Lyle Zupinka, area commander, Pennsylvania State Police. "There were pieces of debris, small pieces of debris laying everywhere. And there were a lot of papers blowing around. And the ground was on fire. The debris was very, very small. There was actually nothing to tell you that it was an aircraft. Had you not known that there was an aircraft crash, you would have looked at it and thought that you would have said something happened here, but I don't know what." John Masley. "There was no way. The hole wasn't big enough, and there was nothing there." You know, maybe the reason why everybody on the scene in Shanksville said that it didn't look like a plane crash is that it wasn't a plane crash. And if it wasn't a plane crash, then what made the hole in the ground? Like, where is Flight 93 then? We were told that there were four planes that were hijacked, and the passengers of Flight 93 rose up, stormed the cockpit, then put the plane down in Shanksville before it was used to fly into the White House. You remember that? That's the story we were told. We have at least 11 different people contradicting the official story about that crash in Shanksville. And these witnesses include police officers, a fire chief, an FBI agent, a reporter, a professional photographer, an EMT, and the county coroner. They all said there were no bodies in the wreckage. They all said there were no airplane parts, and there was no sign of passengers, luggage, or seats. The official story of Flight 93 in Shanksville is a lie. And if that's a lie, what else is a lie? Well, what about the Pentagon? What about the fact that the only photos of the plane crashing in the Pentagon are three still images that were taken from a security camera that don't show anything except a gigantic fireball and nothing coming, you know, nothing coming into screen. It was coming, according to this, it was coming from right to left, flying in and then hitting the outer ring of the Pentagon and exploding. There's no plane in those pictures. There is not a plane in the pictures. There's nothing, and then boom, a gigantic fireball. There's no videos released of that. There's over 200 video cameras around the area that's keeping track, you know, that's photographing the most sensitive building in the world, the Pentagon. We've seen no footage of this airplane. Same thing with the debris out in the grass in front of the Pentagon. Doesn't look like an airplane. It looks like there's parts. There's parts of something. But it's not a 747 or whatever model was, you know, allegedly flown into the Pentagon. There's none of that. Once again, where are all the dead bodies? I mean, not that you want to see dead bodies. But I mean, if there's a plane crash, there's dead bodies. Where's all the luggage? Where's the fuselage? Where's the American Air? You know, where is all this stuff? Here's Jamie McIntyre, CNN military affairs correspondent. This is what he said. A while ago, this is on the more on September 11th. A while ago, I walked right up next to the building. Firefighters were still trying to put out the blaze. The fire, by the way, is still burning in some parts of the Pentagon. And I took a look at the huge gaping hole that's in this side way. But from my close-up inspection, there is no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon. The only site is the actual side of the building that's crashed in. And as I said, the only pieces left that you can see are so small enough that you can pick up in your hands. There's no large tail section, wing section, fuselage, nothing like that anywhere around. Oops. Oops, the CIA or the CNN reporter, paging Dr. Freud, the CNN reporter accidentally told the truth about what he saw. Jamie McIntyre, you're about to get reassigned to Siberia. You can't be talking about that on CNN. You can't be talking about how it doesn't look like a plane crashing in there. But he did. Probably because he was there watching it. He saw it with his own eyes. He couldn't even... Even the CNN guy couldn't even lie about it. I mean, that pretty much tells you everything you need to know. So Jamie McIntyre didn't see anything resembling a plane at the Pentagon. What he did see were men in suits out there on the front lawn picking up all of this debris. Why that is a priority, I don't know. Sounds like destroying evidence of a crime scene, as far as I'm concerned. I don't understand why these people were in such a big hurry to do that. But if you watch the videos, what you'll notice is that there's one gentleman that was out there also helping to pick up debris. And that is Donald Rumsfeld himself was out on the front lawn in front of the Pentagon trying to help pick up debris and move things around and help everybody out. Total photo op. They were trying to reach him during this madness. He was unavailable. But all of a sudden, he's on cleanup duty? I mean, come on now. And of course, that's not the only anomaly for the Pentagon. I think it's important to realize that, you know, it was supposed to have been hit by American Airlines Flight 77, which is a Boeing 757. So that flight disappeared from radar at 8:56 a.m. East Coast time. It then reappeared on radar at 9:32, a full 36 minutes later. That's an interesting turn of events, right? That nobody seems to be talking about. There's some, you know, obvious structural issues here. You can't fit a Boeing 757 with 125-foot wingspan into a hole that's 16 feet wide. You can try, but you're not going to get it to do that. It should shear those wings off, and they should be laying at the grass in the front of the Pentagon, which they are not. There's a theory that was going around that the plane was vaporized. That is preposterous. That is it's an insult to people's intelligence that they're talking about that. According to experts, a Boeing 757 could not possibly perform the 270-degree corkscrew maneuver that it is alleged to have performed in order to get itself into a position to hit the building from that angle. They said that the plane hit the building at 800 kilometers an hour, which is totally and completely unrealistic. You can't fly a plane that fast, that low. It has to do with the thickness of the air. The only way you can go that fast is when you get up higher into, you know, that's why you're at your cruising altitude of 36,000 feet, because the air is thinner. You can go faster. As you lower yourself, as you come down to the ground, you're not landing at 800 kilometers an hour. You can't go that fast. There's structural problems with that story. So the fact that they tried to sell that is a red flag, of course. You've got two witnesses that were there on the scene saying that there was no debris or jet fuel. And you have another witness that says that it was a missile. That didn't sound like an airplane. It sounded like a missile. So the Pentagon has some major flaws in their story. You know, I think it's important that people realize that, you know, you you're talking about some very important buildings, obviously. The Pentagon. Where did that plane hit? Hit in the office of the comptroller's office. And what were they doing there? They'd called a meeting for everybody to bring all their paperwork to get together and discuss the topic that Rumsfeld had addressed just the day earlier. We cannot account for the $2.3 trillion that's missing. You know, that's in my intro. You hear him mention that he made that comment on September 10th, 2001. Guess what happened the next day? Nobody gave a shit about that. You know, the missing $2 trillion. The people that were in charge of investigating it were asked to bring all of their equipment and all their evidence and everything that they've got to the office of the comptroller inside the Pentagon, which is the precise place that was hit by this airplane. What a coincidence. Well, you know, there were anomalies like that in World Trade Center 7 as well. People don't really talk about who the occupants were of that building. Obviously, it was called the Solomon Brothers building. So Solomon Smith Barney, you know, stock brokerage company was there. American Express was there. Standard Chartered Bank, Provident Financial, ITT Hartford Insurance, First State Management, Federal Home Loan Bank, NAIC Securities. Okay, so these are all just, you know, the types of businesses that you would expect to be in there. Who else was in Building 7? Who else were tenants in Building 7? Securities and Exchange Commission were. The Mayor Office of Emergency Management. This is the mayor's bunker. The mayor's bunker was in Building 7. The mayor did not go to his bunker in Building 7. They evacuated it. They, you know, even though this building wasn't hit by a plane, they were told to get the hell out of that building. So their multi-million dollar bunker that had all the state-of-the-art equipment and everything was left empty during that. Who else was a tenant in this building? The U.S. Secret Service. Okay. The Internal Revenue Service. Okay, that could mean nothing, but that's interesting. Anybody else? Anybody? Any other prominent companies or businesses that were running out of World Trade Center 7? Oh yeah, there's one last one. The Central Intelligence Agency had an office in Building 7. Well, that's alarming. I think we'll end it with a quote from Niels Harriot. He is the professor emeritus of chemistry at Copenhagen University. This is what he had to say about Building 7. Now, what happens to a society when we all share a secret, but nobody can talk about it? The fact is that the post-9/11 society is characterized by lies and fear. This time they fucked up. When you see Building 7, it is obvious. It is so open for everyone ready to see what they see. This time, they went too far. We are talking about the fundamental laws of physics. We are talking about Sir Isaac Newton's laws of motion. And according to these, this official 9/11 World Trade Center collapse story is impossible unless you have applied some force to make the building fall. Gravity cannot do that because when a building is in free fall, all of the energy of the building is going into accelerating the building down. There is no energy left for breaking thousands of steel beams and girders. This is completely basic physics. There is no way Building 7 could be brought down without application of explosives unless you are ready to violate Sir Isaac Newton's law of motion. And this hasn't happened since 1687 yet. So if you claim the official story, you are talking about miracles, because a miracle is a violation of the laws of nature. And I don't believe that. If you like the show, share it. Tell your friends and family about it. Let's get the word out there. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.